Right now it is time to bring in Arthur Schwartz, the food maven. I know it's my favorite time of the week because I love to talk about food and hear about food. And Arthur, we have gotten two emails this week about you and your show. Yes. First of all, someone wanted to know, you said you were going to have the bean recipe on demand. I can't find it anywhere. And so I had to reply to them, you have to listen to it. So that was the bean.
Oh, they thought we were going to
write it out. Yeah.
The bean recipe. I don't even know. I mean, they must be the gigantes.
Yeah.
The big Greek beans.
But
I cooked the last of them late last week. Go ahead. And the second email.
The second email.
And I'm sure I gave a recipe on the air.
You did. And that's what we mean.
Yeah.
When we say you can listen to the recipe.
Well, I know, but do we know which podcast it is?
Who remembers? Well, that's it.
Keep a log.
Yeah, but I think they were talking about the week before. But also, I received an email from a longtime listener of yours back in they found you about on Robinhood Radio on the podcast page, about a month and a half ago, and they would like to take your they would like to take your Brooklyn food tour.
Oh well, give them my email address.
Okay, I will do that.
Hand it over to Jill.
I will.
Where do they live?
Brooklyn.
Oh, they must have a second home.
Yeah.
Near Sharon.
Yeah, but
well, that would be wonderful.
Yeah, so
I welcome everybody.
so
I can't. Let me add: you cannot do all of Brooklyn in one day by any means. And I compare it to Sicily, where I have people calling me all the time and saying, not all the time, but enough writing, calling. We're going to Sicily for a week. You know, can you give us an itinerary? I said, well, you can't do all of it. Why not? Well, it's a big place with a lot to see.
And also, you should know, the downloads on your podcast have now broken 1,000 downloads a week.
Oh, I guess that's good.
That's really good. That's really good. That's really good.
Okay, keep the numbers up.
That's right. Keep listening and keep responding.
So let me say to those who are faithful listeners, I have to do a follow-up on last week when I was talking about lamb breast. I found this recipe in the flyer, the back page of the flyer for Netcost, which is a chain of supermarkets, for want of a better way to describe them, that cater to the Soviet diaspora, meaning people who speak Russian but may actually be Asian. We have a lot of Central Asian people in Brooklyn, and I think we have 5 of these Netcost stores in Brooklyn. There are 2 in Philadelphia. Wherever there is a Russian, Ukrainian, Uzbeki community, there is a Netcost.
Now, this is so weird.
Pardon me?
I just want to say, this is weird, but I think I found one on Staten Island, too. I was
Yes, and there is one on Staten Island, too. So I said, the Soviet diaspora community. So anyway, I got the recipe for the lamb breast off their flyer. It's identical to one by somebody named Chef John at allrecipes.com, and he actually has a video of making it. But getting lamb breast is not easy, even here in Brooklyn. You got to go to Netcost, I guess, if you want a reliable source, because the people who shop there eat lamb breast. Where I live, in Park Slope, nobody has lamb breast. Except, I remembered that, I mean, my butcher, my Calabrian butcher here in Windsor Terrace would unquestionably order it for me. But I was just shopping around, and because I remembered that a few months ago at the Whole Foods here, which is on 3rd Avenue and 3rd Street, which technically is Gowanus, they have a huge parking lot. It's a big enticement to me. And I found that since Amazon bought Whole Foods, it's a better store. And there are some things you can't get there, and I still have to go to my normal supermarket. And there are certain things that I would go there for, including meat, it ends up. So this young man that I met there some months ago, I said, oh, you're a butcher? He said, no, I'm here to apprentice, to become a butcher. They teach you how to be a butcher here. at Whole Foods. And when I asked about the lamb breast, I was referred to Ursula in the butchering room. And I'd never walked over to that window, but there was a beautiful African-American woman, I would say 30-ish, you don't ask age, but a young woman, who was butchering animals. I mean, it wasn't like she was just cutting up meat that was sent in cryovac, which is what so many butchers
do many.
These days.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's so depressing.
No, they had so when I said to her, they told me to ask you if you had lamb breast, and she said, well, and she pointed to three lamb hanging from the hooks, three whole carcasses. So, and I knew that it was, I think I told you, maybe I forgot to say that the young man that I met a few months ago who was apprenticing as a butcher told me that the lamb is local. And I said to her, is that local lamb? And she says, from New Jersey. So I was very happy. She needed some time to butcher those animals. So I had to come back the next day. And my recipe called for 4 pounds of lamb breast, which I got the impression from the recipe was going to be in one big piece. One side of, you know, think about it. If you're doing the breast ribs, then and the animal is cut down the middle to eviscerate it, what you have is two racks of breasts, of ribs. And anyway, they only weigh, she said, well, my rack is only going to weigh a little over 2 pounds. I mean, she knew this already from, she had really experienced. I said to her, did you go to school to learn how to be a butcher? She said, no, I was trained here at Whole Foods. So anyway, lamb. She trimmed up the lamb breast. I came for it the next day. It was two racks, were a little over 4 pounds together. So maybe that's what the recipe meant. You know, I don't know how you get a whole rack there without it being split. But anyway, it was enough for the two of us for two meals. I won't do it again.
Okay.
It's really labor intensive because it is really, really fatty. And even slow cooking it in the oven covered to make it super tender, which it was, I rendered off nearly 2 cups of fat. And there was still plenty of fat on there. It's akin to a pork belly, but it's lamb belly. And it's still attached to the ribs. So think about it. So I'm going to try this recipe again because I love the seasoning.
So it was just that it was too fatty, Arthur?
The meat was too fatty. I mean, we enjoyed it once, and then we had to eat another one
right.
Another night.
No, because...
because I had two, and I did roast off two. I must say, I roasted off two. We ate one the night that I roasted it off that day. And the other one I wrapped in foil and put in the fridge, and we had it 2 days later. Reheat, well, you in the end, you reheat this anyway. You roast it covered for several hours, and then you uncover it and put it in a very, very hot oven. And so, anyway, it was very good the second time, but already we were tired of all that fat. We're not used to it.
Right, and you know, pork belly is really yummy, but lamb fat, I don't know. I love fat, so this is, you know, Mrs. Spratt here. Yeah, that's exactly.
Well, this is very delicious fat.
But there's,
you know, I
there's
can't
a
say
level.
That it was, but I wasn't just not used to that.
Yeah, there's just a
saturation
Anyway,
I was
point.
Very happy we'd had a, when we ate this yet last night, that we'd had a vegetarian cold lunch.
prior to.
Including, I have to say, one of the best tzatzikis I've made. I'm happy I actually noted down what I did so I could repeat it. Tzatziki is yogurt with cucumber and garlic usually, and in my case with dill. I love dill these days, but you could also have it with mint, and even in the winter you can have it, and I like it with dried mint. I can't think of the word. The reason I made this is that I'm now offended by the prices at my farmer's market.
No, you didn't, but I can see why you might be.
I just cringe. And in the tomatoes were $3.50 a pound, and I bought great tomatoes for $2.50 a pound at the supermarket, fancy supermarket, and also at an independent farmer at another market that isn't part of the city green market system. So I don't know what's happening with the city green market system, but $6 a pound for peas, $8 a pound for peas. And I noticed this last time I was there that the population that uses their EBT cards, their food stamp cards, has disappeared. Because even if you can trade in on an EBT card for coupons that give you sort of like cash to pay the farmers, who then, I guess, cash it in. But I don't see those people anymore, because who can afford this? Even middle class people.
And that's the.
However,
thing.
I gotta say, however, there was four cucumbers for $2.50 a cucumber. So that's what made me make tzatziki. I said, oh, that's, and they were really good cucumbers, I have to say. And I used, what I do is I peel the cucumbers. These aren't waxed, and if you like or don't mind the peel, you can use it, but I don't. I peel the cucumbers with my vegetable peeler. I split them in half lengthwise, and then I scoop out with a teaspoon the seeds and that seed pulp that's down the middle. So now you have a shell. And with my hand box grater on the coarsest side, and I have a good box grater, so this is not a struggle. You could do it in a food processor if you want. Shred the cucumbers. When you're doing this, by the way, by hand on a box grater, you're going to find that the shells of cucumber are sort of flimsy-ish, so it's not so easy to do necessarily unless you hold it down, like only maybe an inch, hold the cucumber piece down near where it's meeting the grater, and then you will have enough, and you squeeze it together, it works. So for two cucumbers prepared that way, I added about a cup and a half, could have been a cup and three quarters, I just finished the container, of whole milk Greek yogurt. I don't like the zero fat, but if you do, go ahead. There's 2%, which is a decent compromise, I feel, but I've been buying this upstate New York yogurt called Chobani.
Right.
And I like it. So I told my cousin Ellen I was going to invite her for lunch, and I was making this, and she said, I don't like Chobani yogurt. I said, you mean you won't eat tzatziki made with Chobani yogurt? She said, I don't think I'd like it. So anyway, she didn't come for lunch.
It would have been a good test, though.
So I used one large clove of garlic, chopped very, very fine, and about a half a cup of finely chopped fresh dill. If you don't want dill, have dill. Mint is great. I mean, at this time of the year, the mint in the garden is going crazy. So you might just want to chop up some fresh mint. I actually used my fresh mint. It's still coming up in the garden, even though the gardener keeps pulling it out, to make tabbouleh instead, bulgur wheat with chopped herbs. So that's it. Two cukes, cup and a half or so of whole milk, Greek yogurt, a large clove of garlic, and a half a cup of dill. So along the same lines, we've been eating sour cream. At Net Cost, the supermarket I have mentioned where I got the lamb recipe, was on their flyer. I believe, by the way, they have they've plagiarized that recipe from the website that I found it on. And I don't think the picture that came with the Net Cost recipe is lamb breast at all. So that was what got me going on this whole thing, if you remember, is I look at this picture and said, that doesn't look like any lamb breast that I know. So I go online and find the very recipe online on All Recipes website. Anyway, Canadian-style sour cream. is what I bought there. And I've been intrigued by this. I see this also in the in other supermarkets I've been to in Brooklyn that cater to this community. This is really a laugh and a half. It's in Cyrillic on the. By the way, there is a brand name. I went online for this too because what is Canadian style sour cream? And Netcost puts the sour cream in their own container, but has on the cover the cover from another brand. So I'm thinking that maybe they buy this brand in bulk. And then, whatever, if you go online and look up Canadian-style sour cream, there are a lot of threads. And why is it called Canadian-style sour cream? Well, one guy joked, it apologizes for being sour.
Okay.
Maybe you didn't get that.
Canadian, no, I got it.
Yeah,
no,
I thought it was hysterical. It started my day off with a laugh.
All right, well,
so,
you started, what does it taste
anyway,
like?
Nobody seems to really know, except that somewhere back in the Soviet Union, they were selling Canadian-style... by the way, in Cyrillic, I can read this, it says Canadian Smetna. Smetna is Russian sour cream. Has a on the cover of this container, it has a Cossack-style-looking guy, like a Russian peasant. Not Cossack, I shouldn't say that. A Russian peasant, like Tevye. It could be Tevye.
It is Tevye. I'm looking at it right. But here's
Oh, you are?
Yes.
And what's the brand? Because it ends up it's not on this container, the actual brand. It starts with a K, and it's like the second thing you're going to get if you look up Canadian. Pardon me?
It looks like Kahak.
Yeah, something like that. So, anyway, he's holding a wooden barrel and a wooden spoon ladle.
And it does
look like Tevye. The laugh is, it's made with, according to the label, real California milk, Canadian style sour cream, with the name in Cyrillic as well as English. And one of the people in one of those threads about Canadian style sour cream found it in Dubai. So, what can I say?
I'm confused. What is
it's global. You're confused?
What is
the guy who posted this online lives in Dubai. He found this container of Canadian-style sour cream in Dubai, and he was laughing. It's called, because it's in Cyrillic, it's in English, it's called Canadian-style, and it's made with real California milk.
So did you get any, or no?
I did. It's great. It was better until I read the actual label ingredients, which I had not. It is full of stuff that I don't really think I want in my sour cream. Netcost couldn't get away with not listing...
Not labeling it?
The ingredients, but they have gotten away with having no nutritional labeling on this container. But you can readily find it online. But it contains a whole slew of citrate. I don't know. It's not bad stuff necessarily, but I don't know. So there's a number of additives. It is extremely creamy sour cream, meaning it doesn't stand up on its own the way Breakstones does. I find Daisy is a little bit more like this Canadian sour cream. I just took some in my mouth. I like it.
Did you ever eat Hood up
here? It's sour. It's sour. It's not sweet. Oh, there's one comment there about it being a little sweeter than American sour cream. I don't know. It should be by fat content. Somewhere I could not find this. What is the fat content? Because Smetna can be up to 40% fat. I don't know about American sour cream. I have to do more research on this.
Okay.
It apologizes for being sour. I love it.
I don't know. I mean, I have always been, just in terms of brand, I've always been a Breakstone, but Hood is a good close second.
I grew up with Breakstone. I recently bought Daisy instead. You know, as I have been saying my whole food writer life, which is my adult life, you love whatever you grew up eating, no matter how disgusting. So I don't know if Breakstone is disgusting or not, but it's the taste I Here's an example of that. I remember this from maybe 20 years ago. One of the food magazines did a food tasting on blind on chocolate chip cookies, and of course the ones made with Nestle's Bits were the favorite over the ones made with more, you know.
Yeah, Valrhona or something.
Whatever, chocolate, you know, special chocolate.
But
I love special chocolate, so there you go.
Yeah, but there are certain things that don't go as well. I have to say, the things that I grew up with, I have gone back in the decades since I grew up and done these not even blind taste tests, and in many cases, I've been absolutely horrified. So
yeah, my prime example of that always is my grandmother's potato pudding, potato kugel, which I used to love. And then when I have the recipe written in her hand, actually more than once, on the back of an envelope. You know, she used to do, I must say what I do sometimes, just write the ingredient list on the back of an envelope and take it into the kitchen. In any case, I made that pudding. I didn't like it at all. I thought it was totally stodgy. And I remember watching her do it. I knew how she did it. And now, so I had to come up with another recipe that made me say, oh, how delicious is my grandmother's potato pudding. Anyway, I'm just like, I don't want to turn the heat on in my kitchen. I'm sure I discovered this in years past, but I'm blaming my little special refrigerators for heating up my kitchen as much as it is. You turn on the oven, you turn on even the top of the stove for too long, and you're in a sauna. Well, actually, given the humidity today, you're in a steam room. But my friend Judy Witz Francini, Francini, otherwise known as Divina Cucina, that's the name of her newsletter, Divina, Divine Food, Cuisine, Kitchen, however you want to. Anyway, Judy is an American who's been living in Italy near Siena for 30 years, close to anyway. And she's a cooking teacher, and she goes on, takes tours to Sicily, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, she does, on Facebook, she does little videos of her in her kitchen in her really rustic home in the Tuscan countryside. And, you know, it gets hot and humid there, too. In fact, hotter and more hot and humid. So she was the other day saying, vitello tonnato, great thing, but who wants to braise a veal shoulder in this weather? So I make the tonnato, the mayonnaise, with tuna mayonnaise, tonnato. That's the name of the sauce for veal with tuna sauce. It's a tuna mayonnaise. So she says, I make this, and I put it on sliced tomatoes. Great idea. Who doesn't love tuna, mayonnaise, and tomatoes in whatever combination? Interesting, I was thinking about this. She makes her mayonnaise with her immersion blender, a technique she shows online. You can go on to Facebook and find her, I'm sure. And it's something I see all the time in Italy in my friends' kitchens and on the food shows on TV. They use their immersion blender in a cylinder so that there's a column of whatever you're pureeing. It's a column. It's not spread out over a width. So when she made this mayonnaise, she calls it her one-minute mayonnaise. She just put the ingredients, the egg yolk, or maybe I think she used the whole egg, oil, lemon juice, some mustard. She used powdered mustard. I always have Dijon mustard in the house, and I usually put in a very small spoonful of that in my mayonnaise. And she just up and down, up and down, up and down for 1 minute with the immersion blender in the column, and it became mayonnaise. Years ago, I wanted to do this. I have an immersion blender. I use it all the time, but I never had a column to put it into, and I see how efficient that is when you're pureeing. So I was saying to Cecilia, we were staying in Salerno at the time, and I said to Cecilia, I have to find one of these. And the next day she shows up, with this beautiful plexiglass, acrylic, whatever it is, clear pitcher was way too nice to use for making purees. So it has been our water pitcher here, keeping filtered water for years now. Anyway, I tried this technique in my mini processor. It did not work. I did not get mayonnaise. So what happens if you, this happens to people when they're making mayonnaise in the blender or in a processor, is you pour out the liquid that you've just created with a cup of oil. I used one whole egg, some lemon juice and mustard, just like Judy does. Pour it out. Put another egg in your blender or processor, or in your bowl if you're using, maybe an electric hand mixer or a whisk. Put it back in, and put the yolk in the bowl, beat it, and then gradually, like you would in making a normal mayonnaise, at first drip by drip, and then in a little thin stream, add the broken mayonnaise. And you will get a good mayonnaise. It'll maybe a tiny bit eggy, but that's not such a bad
thing. Tell everybody that they can get the recipe online.
Don't say that, because people mishear.
That's right. They can listen to our podcast back.
They can use the podcast that will be dated today.
Yes.
Right.
July.
Okay.
All right. 20,
it is. Yes, it is the 23rd.
Trust us.
All right, Arthur.
We covered a lot of territory today.
Yes, we did, and it's very yummy.
But wait till you hear what I'm going to tell you next week, which I know already, because we have these two young Italian boys, 19-year-olds, who cook.
Okay.
And the boy from Palermo gave me a great recipe.
All right.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Have a great week, everyone.
You too. Lots of love.
Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, here on Robin Hood Radio.
Underwriting support for Arthur Schwartz, the food maven, from Hathaway Young, located on South Center Street in Millerton, Flawless Catering and Event Planning, HathawayYoung.com. John Andrews Restaurant on the Hillsdale Road in South Egremont, 413-528-3467, on the web, jarestaurant.com. Rubiner's Cheesemongers and Grocers on Main Street in Great Barrington, 413-528-0488, Rubiner's.com. In Hillsdale, New York, Hillsdale Home Chef, with two beautiful teaching classes. And they've got classes to go in those cooking rooms. More information, 518-325-7000, hghshomechef.com. And Haven Cafe in Lenox, Massachusetts, offering quality food and excellent service. From a fresh cup of great coffee to healthy, delicious breakfast, or sit down with a dinner with a tasty, life-enhancing meal that you can take home. Also, they feature catering. Supporting local organic farmers, environmentally conscious, and epicurious distributors, havencafebakery.com.